Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Defy Radio. Today is January 20th, 2015, and we are on day 17 of our Suicide Awareness and Prevention New York Tour, addressing the issues of mental health, mental illness, and the challenges that are faced with people who are affected by it. Today we're going to present to you a look at the correlation between mental health and gun violence. We deal with a lot of gun violence issues, a lot of trauma, a lot of people are affected by gun violence. We provide counseling, one-on-one counseling, talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and other types of counseling and therapy for victims of gun violence, those who have survived being shot, and those who have lost a loved one to gun violence. But what we're going to be doing today is we're going to highlight the correlation between mental health and gun violence for people to understand how the mental health piece plays a very big part in the overall issues of gun violence and the ways in which the violence, the lack of empathy, the lack of regard for life, the lack of regard for the impacts on individuals as well as communities. So today, we want to highlight for you that. So I have some guests with me today who are going to be sharing with you and also sharing in the dialogue of how we look at this and how we address this, so that a proper understanding can be had when we look at gun violence and not just looking at the gun violence itself arising there, but looking at the impacts and the build-out and the ripple effects and the long-term and short-term trauma that results from this. Many families and many people have lost a loved one where their loved one died in their arms or died in front of them, and they witnessed that and they saw that. So there is a trauma piece to that. There is an ongoing, distress that people go through, coping with it, trying to deal with it, all that. But then we have to ask ourselves, what is the mental health state, or what is the mental state of the person who commits this type of act? What is the mental health state of a person who can just look at a life and totally disregard that life to the point where they don't understand, or they don't care, or they understand and don't care of what that life's value is and the impact that life being taken is now going to have on not just the person, but the extended family and the close family of that person. We need to understand that mental health is one of the core issues that's at the root cause of a lot of the social violence and the societal issues that we're dealing with, where many people find themselves hurting, struggling, and suffering with emotional issues that they have no control over or don't understand. And so because they can't control it or they don't understand it, they act out in ways of violence and abuse. Sometimes that abuse is self-abuse on themselves, but the self-abuse that they inflict on themselves also hurts those that are around them. Sometimes the anger and the aggression and the violence of the chaos within us, in our hearts and our minds, is so chaotic and so out of control that the things we say, the things we do, and how we feel manifests itself in ways that sometimes hurt others. And that's one of the reasons why we say hurt people, because when a person is hurting and in pain and feeling the anguish of that pain, sometimes they have no control over themselves and they lose themselves to that. And so the end result is what we're seeing a lot of times when we look at gun violence and we look at domestic violence and the perpetrating of those acts of violence as a result of the mental state being in chaos, unrest, and just having a hard time coping with what they're going through. So this month, we're continuing our Suicide Awareness and Prevention Tour. But not only just looking at the suicide of taking one's life, but also suicide by cop, suicide by gun violence. Because a lot of people don't understand that sometimes the gun violence is also an act of one taking their own life, putting their lives at risk, and another form of suicide. But sometimes we only see suicide as one taking their own life with a direct result of them putting a gun to their head. But we have to broaden the scope of our understanding to realize that our mental health state, sometimes we are slowly killing ourselves, knowing full well that we're dying and we're killing ourselves, but it's our way up, our way out. We have to broaden the mindset to understand that people are in crisis and they're in distress, and from that crisis and distress will always come the anger, the frustration, the fighting, the violence. These are the hard realities that we face, ladies and gentlemen, and that's why today we're focusing on letting you understand that there is a core piece to the gun violence that stems from mental health, and that mental health and the lack of love and empathy, compassion, those core traits that allows a person to respect and love life, not only the life of others, but their own life itself, is something largely missing in many people today, and that's why the continued anger and violence is something that's going to greatly improve and grow and get into more challenges for us to deal with. So I invited some guests with me today for us to have this conversation. I don't want you to hear just from me. I want you to hear from them because they've been advocates, they've lost loved ones to gun violence, they themselves have been victims of gun violence. And so they understand the human aspects of this as well as the psychological impact of this. And so we want to bring this to you from a number of different angles for us to really look at this and understand it. So let me bring on my first guest. We have a brother that's been out and he's been really a voice, an advocate, someone who really understands the whole, the human challenges that are affecting us because of the life force and the energy. And he focuses a lot on healing, something that we really are trying to get more people to recognize and understand how important it is for us to start the healing process. We're way behind on healing because of trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma, hurt on top of hurt, hurt inside of hurt, pain inside of hurt. For so many generations that we're seeing that mental health instability manifests itself in more violence. So please welcoming Mr. LaShawn Marston, otherwise known as Sugar Ray. Good afternoon, my brother. How are you? Thank you for joining.
Peace. Great afternoon. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Very important topic. Ready.
Yes, my brother. Thank you. And, you know, I just gave our listeners a brief introduction into why we're focusing on this piece. Because they, you know, they see we're doing our tour and we're on the suicide tour and they get caught up on the word suicide, not realizing that suicide can be done in a number of different ways. But also wanting to bring attention to the mental health pieces of all that's happening in regards to the gun violence pieces. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me.
All right. So can you introduce yourself, my brother? Give everyone an opportunity to hear more about you and know the great work that you're doing.
Oh, man. I'm just a young brother from Queens, just striving to always do my part to, manifest, you know, what we call heaven on earth, right? Bliss. For all people, freedom for all people. I'm just here, you know, interested in many fields, all of the sciences, you know, have a great passion for, have a great passion, obviously, for people, for life, you know, for all life, for human life as well as animal life, plant life, and even life that we don't see. I'm just here, you know, this topic is extremely important. Not even so much making a correlation between mental health and gun violence, right? But just because let us first understand that the mental state of a person determines their everything, right? It determines their daily practices. It determines it determines everything, your mental state. So therefore, your mental health determines everything. So let us not be mistaken or blinded and only think that your mental state determines whether or not you'll be violent, but your mental state will determine your religious beliefs and how hard you will go to try to persuade people. That's also an act of violence, that I would consider an act of violence, right? So it's extremely important to understand the mental, the mental state of people. Of course, today, 2015, across the world, people are stressed, for multiple reasons. People are dealing with a lot of, like you say, emotional trauma, emotional instability, illness, a lot of physical illness. People are definitely broken. And obviously, when you mix that people are emotionally hurt, you mix that with alcohol, mix that with other financial stresses and other, family relationship stresses going on in society, definitely people are more inclined to be violent, physically violent, verbally violent in relationships, and physically violent with picking up weapons or even using their bare hands to hurt people. So, yeah, great, 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 necessary topic.
All right, thank you. Thank you, my brother. And, thank you for broadening the scope of that. Because, yes, we do understand the correlation and how that manifests itself into many aspects of our lives. But it's important, as we say, to address how specific things, because, one of the things that we realize is that this whole mental health topic is such a broad topic for many people. And they get lost in the whole, trying to wrap their head around just what mental health is, because now you're reversing their thought process that mental health is not about being crazy, but it's just about our everyday ability to function and cope with life. And so when you look at that and you think about that, then we realize that, we have a lot of work to do in re-educating our people in saying that mental health is just our everyday ability to function and cope with life. And so that by itself gives us a lot of work to do with it. So, thank you for expounding on that. But today we're going to just look at the gun violence piece and how you see and what you see out here in our communities. So if you want to just take a minute just to share what you see. You say you're from Queens, but I know you also cover New York City in the work that you do, but what are your concerns with the gun violence issues that we're facing in the city right now?
Going back, again, it's a mental state. I cannot speak about, because me personally, being a brother who is from Queensbridge, particularly Queensbridge and South Jamaica, also being knee deep in the streets myself, understanding that when I was violent in any way, it was obviously something that stemmed or that started long before in my mind and in my heart, with a lack of ability to comprehend or understand, or a lack of love, or a lack of ability to articulate whatever I was feeling in a non-destructive, non-self-destructive, or even out-of-destructive way. So if I'm to talk about gun violence and mental health, I have to just talk about violence and mental health, right? Because the gun is just tool used. Obviously, as people would say, it's high now in our communities, with gun violence. But then I would ask the question, are we talking about the mental health of just people living in the same community killing each other? Or are we also going to talk about the mental health or the mental state of authorities killing people? Do we separate that, or is there one? Before I can go forth, I need to understand that.
Right now we want to focus on the impacts on the victims and survivors, because, as I said, it is a broad topic. Today we invited people who have lost a loved one, because we're also focusing on the healing piece as well. So today we wanted the topic to be a little bit narrowed down to just gun violence specifically and how we see people dying in our communities, the impact on them, the mental state of those who are committing the crimes and the ones who are affected by the crimes. We want to try to keep it a little bit narrow, because we don't want to go all over the place. We want to just try to focus on that, because the theme of our tour is healing and wellness, let's heal. So while we're talking about the gun violence specifically, We want to also have the listeners who are listening who are victims of gun violence, who've lost a loved one. We want to also give them some encouragement, words of encouragement, not to re-traumatize or re-trigger, but to give them some healing and comfort as they move forward with their life.
Definitely. The healing part, obviously, you know, with all of the killings, you know, the tragedies in our community, you know, it tears apart families. You know, it tears apart families. That sudden loss in that drastic manner, you know, myself losing close friends and relatives as well, is something that some never recover from. You know, it shatters people's lives, you know, to wake up or to get a call or to see or to hear in any form that your loved one, you know, someone who you love dearly, especially a child, has been killed, has been murdered, you know, by something for the most part is senseless. It's just a miscommunication or just a misfire even. It can drive, and it does, and it has driven people, what we would call insane, has totally disrupted their daily routine, their lives, you know, put them in a state of depression. Some people turn to drugs and sex and other forms of self-destructive behavior to try to cope and to just try to not think about or not remember. You know, some have seen their loved ones killed, you know, and I can only imagine the emotional trauma that one experiences and suffers from when that happens. And so definitely families and even victims, myself, being a perpetrator of violence, of gun violence, as well as being a victim, I fully understand both sides. You know, the trauma in being shot and remembering in your daily walk and your daily activity, yo, I was shot, like, it hurts. And those memories, those visions of when it happened or what could have been or what almost happened, and just it never leaves you, you know, and it takes a community, it takes total support to help victims, survivors, and loved ones through. And, of course, especially when children are lost, you know, or parents are lost, it definitely takes a lot of community support, a lot of patience, and just strength, man. And I think one of the keys in dealing with gun violence, whether a victim or perpetrator who seeks forgiveness or a family member or community resident, is to let their emotion out. If it hurts, cry. You know, if you're angry, go in the park somewhere and scream. Find somebody to talk to. Write about it. You know, use the art. But it's extremely important that we express those emotions because it does hurt. It does hurt. Again, as a victim and as a perpetrator who seeks forgiveness and is truly sorry for the act they committed, because myself, again, as a perpetrator, I am truly sorry for the act that I committed. But I know that I can never reverse what I did. And so, again, those memories stay with me. And we seek forgiveness. And, again, it hurts, man, and it takes love and the highest understanding and the highest form to help anyone or for anyone to get through it. Yeah, man, it's not a joke. It's real life and it's real emotion and it's real stuff happening. And so the work that you do, even this topic, of course, like I said, is extremely important. Thank you.
Well, thank you, my brother. You know, one of the things that worries me and one of the reasons why I'm sure you understand why I try to stay more focused and specific in a certain way is because I see that many of the victims and loved ones that are left behind, they, you know, we talk about all the loss that they go through and how bad the loss may be, but we never help them with the healing part. And so a lot of them, sometimes the conversations that we have with them or, you know, people have with them are re-triggering and re-traumatizing, and they go home or they're in their home reliving the incident over and over and over and over again, especially if it's on the media. And you have to watch it over and over as the media plays it out and the media, you know, highlights it. But we really need to, as a society, look at the fact that, yes, there is a mental health correlation on both sides for the victim and the perpetrator, but also look at the ripple effects of how that spans out into a community hurting when there's a loss of life like that. But how do we heal? You know, we don't talk about healing and we don't help people to heal because, again, many of us don't even know how to heal or the fact that we understand that whole mental health impact from the trauma. So you know, it's important that as we continue looking at the issues and the loss of life and the grief and loss process, is that in the message of how we talk about what happens, we also have to talk about healing, just as you said. Don't be afraid to talk about it. Don't be afraid to cry. Don't be afraid to let the emotions out. But also, one of the things that I try to tell people who've lost a loved one is now may not be the time for you to have too many people around you. Now may not be the time to put yourself too much too public out there, because, again, sometimes the re-traumatizing or re-victimizing effect makes the loss and the grief even more. And some people can't move forward from that. So they develop this anger and this aggression because they're hurting. And instead of healing, they're adding more hurt and more pain on top of the hurt and pain that they're going through. And that's a very big problem. So, you know, the healing part is very important. You know, as I said, I do work with a lot of families, victims of gun violence, and the truth of the matter is they're just reliving the whole trauma over and over again without no form of healing or support for that.
Yeah, definitely. The healing part is that's everything. You know, too often, especially like you said, when the case is public and it's in the media, whether mainstream media or social media, the family never have a chance to grieve because they're out there and they're speaking or attention is always on them, so they never have that alone time to just sit and reflect. You're constantly going, working. And obviously, to be active is productive, and you want to work towards change, but you have to take time to heal. You have to take time to understand, gain some form of understanding. So then you have, you know, you can be strong, not only in working towards, you know, change for the greater cause, but working on yourself, you know, working on yourself, learning how to deal with, how to cope with, how to be alone, how to go to those familiar places that you and your beloved used to visit, you know, how to listen to the same music while being able to smile through the tears rather than be angry and just sad and, you know, want to turn to any form of you know, substance for comfort. And that's a great part of my work is helping people heal. And what I like to do is actually, you know, forms of meditation. You know, I like to, you know, take beloved, you know, relatives to the park, you know, or to sit by water or to sit in nature, and to help them just, you know, connect with the spirit, connect with the energy. You know, I like to, you know, obviously suggest they visit places and do listen to music and things that their loved ones enjoy, you know. And remember the good times, remember the laughter, remember the smile. You know, and through that, especially in nature with agriculture and with plants and with gardening, I like to help parents especially try to gain an understanding of everlasting life, that the cycle continues. You know, when a leaf falls off the tree, people say the tree is dying, or the leaf died, but it regenerates, it goes back into itself, you know, it comes out a little different, but it's the same energy. And so, again, obviously the healing is extremely important, and what I like to do personally is to help loved ones connect through nature, through water, through understanding water, making a connection with the water spirit, as well as through, you know, in through gardens and through plant life and things like that. Just to help, you know, the connection that life is always here.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and thank you for sharing some of those strategies, because as I say, you know, every day we hear about the gun violence issues, but we don't talk about enough about the mental health impacts and the ways in which people can heal from that. So let me ask you, my brother, one question in terms of how do you see our youth today dealing with the violence? I mean, we see that the violence is increasing in a lot of ways, but how do you see, what do you see with the youth today as it relates to the gun violence piece? Because, you know, I remember growing up, you talk about people getting shot and killed and people running every direction, right? And people were very nervous of that. Nobody wanted to be in the middle of that. But today, you know, we see a lot of our young people being drawn to gun violence where, you know, there are shots being fired and people dying and, you know, it's not that fear anymore. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh man. Well, clearly, you know, our young people have, like you said, lost the fear. They become desensitized to not only, you know, the dead bodies, but just the gunshots alone. I remember again when I was growing up, when I was a small child, you know, I was born in the '80s. So when I was a small child, hearing gunshots on New Year's Eve shocked me. Like it shook me. New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, people shooting. It's like, oh snap! But now it's like, oh, they're shooting. Oh, it's nothing. And it's like, wow. So definitely, right? And of course, we can say that that was propagated through our music and through culture and through movies and things like that to desensitize us, right, through media and marketing. But obviously, the youth, they're hurting. And because the greater community, us as a whole, we haven't provided enough outlets and enough tools for them to know how to deal with their grief. They're internalizing it and they're expressing it through the same forms, through more violence, do more drugs, do more alcohol, do more sex, you know, do more what some would call reckless or self-destructive behavior. And so, again, obviously they're mentally unstable. They haven't learned how to deal with grief. They haven't learned how to deal with emotional disappointment or emotional instability. They haven't learned how to deal with loss, not only loss of loved ones, but just loss of possession, because a lot of the, again, back to my own life, back to my own personal examples, a lot of the violence was loss of possession, whether it was money or whether it was a female. You know, people fought and people shot. And again, that's a direct result of emotional imbalance, which again goes deeper to chemical imbalance, right? But saying on the emotional wellness part of it, our young people are unstable, mentally unstable. There's so many suggestions saying what they should do if this happens, and not all of them obviously are positive or productive or progressive. You know, the results, this happens, you go drink. This happens, you go smoke. You go find a partner and you go have sex. You don't think and you don't take time to sit and reflect and be with that emotion, be with those feelings of losing a loved one or of, you know, witnessing violence, because a lot of our young people also are witnessing it, even if they're not physically experiencing it or if it's not a loved one, they're seeing it. Either live, they're seeing it live, or they're seeing it on the internet. And again, that all of that is desensitizing them to make it seem like it's normal. And so there's no heightened awareness that, you know, this is not, it's something going on. It's like, oh, a person just got shot yesterday. You know, I remember a few years ago, young brother, his cousin had got killed. And I asked him a few weeks later, yo, you okay? I knew he wasn't. And he said, yeah. And he looked like he believed that he was okay, you know, but I knew that his behavior was showing that he wasn't. And he didn't even recognize that, you know. And his family didn't recognize it. It takes someone who is into the world, who has been trained, whether professionally or through just life, to recognize the hurt and the pain, again, because it manifests itself in a multitude of ways that are all destructive. Unless, obviously, right, it's productive through the arts and things like that. But, yeah, it's a scary state, you know, for our young people, you know, with all of the violence, all of the tools used to desensitize them, and to even dehumanize, right, or to not dehumanize, to dehumanize those whose lives have been lost, but to humanize and to popularize those who commit the violence. Person killed this person shot that person is now in the head honcho. And again, it's showing in media, right, not only in the urban community where, you know, you say, you know, a family is killing family, but even through recent cases with Darren Wilson, that's gun violence. And he was heralded as a hero. He made tons of money, and people clap for him. And so that has an extreme emotional impact on many forms that we're not even going to get into now, but All of that stuff contributes to the mental state of our young people, which leads to predominantly forms of violence. Most easily and readily is a gun.
All right. Thank you so much, my brother. You touched on a couple of great points that we're going to get back to. Let me bring on one of our other guests with us, Mr. Michael Tucker, who he lost his son to gun violence and has been advocating through in his organization, doing a lot of work with families and just providing resources for families. Mr. Tucker, thank you for joining us, sir. Thank you for being with us.
No problem, sir. Thank you for having me.
All right. So, Mr. Tucker, could you introduce yourself and, just let our listeners know about you, the work that you're doing, and then we can get into a conversation.
Okay, no problem. Well, my name is Mike Tucker. I'm the founder of an organization called the Later Guns Now Foundation. Unfortunately, that organization was started because my oldest son was killed in 2005 by a New York City police officer. Instead of being looked upon as another angry black father or angry black man about a situation that happened with their child, I decided to start the organization to be able to educate people on the consequences of gun violence and how it's destroying families, and to be able to work with families who had experienced the same tragedy that I did or similar, just losing a loved one to violence or to gun violence, especially being able to work with them to get them the resources they might not, you know, when a person loses a family member to violence, it really tears them apart. But when you lose a person to gun violence, a tragedy like that, it really impacts them. A lot of people don't understand that when people go through that situation of losing a person to gun violence, this is something that they deal with every day, and they relive it every day when someone else loses their life to gun violence. And I really wanted to be able to, like I said, connect with them people and help them get out of that situation, because some people, when they lose a family member, they just don't come out of it and they don't know how to deal with it. So my organization basically tries to be that crutch for those families, for their friends, for their loved ones, for their children, to say, we experienced the same thing that you did, but this is what we are going to do to ensure that no one else loses their life. You know, I do a lot of different events. We do an event where we take kids who have been affected by gun violence to go meet the New York Giants football players. I do an event every year in front of the Barclays Center called the Back to School Bash. We do, you know, Christmas events. There's a lot of different events that we do, and the reason that we do it, I'm always in the Barclays Center. We take hundreds of people to games every month and concerts at the Barclays Center. And the reason that we do this is because, like I said, we want to educate people. So in the time that we're together, we're talking to them about gun violence and how it affects people and what they can do to be a catalyst against gun violence and how they can work toward doing some of the things that I'm doing, but really to, like I said, just spread the word that gun violence is an epidemic like AIDS, like cancer, and that it needs to be recognized that way.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mr. Tucker. I want to also congratulate you on your recent recognition award by the Barclays, or by the, what is it, the Nets? I can't remember exactly what it is.
It's
I heard
Barclays Center and Brooklyn Nets. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. You're welcome. We'll get a little bit into that. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tucker is a very passionate man who has lost his son. And when I talk about the impact and the psychological impact, he is a person, as much as he has his heart in the right place to do what he has to do, he has gone through the trauma, not just of losing a child, but dealing with the societal issues of people understanding what it means or how it feels to lose a child. So, Mike, what we're talking about today is focusing on that trauma piece, that, you know, the human impact, the psychological impact, the stress and the pain that comes from that. Because, you know, we hear of gun violence and we hear so much of, you know, this whole piece of about gun violence. But what we don't hear a lot of is the fight for life that is left behind by the victim and the family, and how they have to deal with the chaos, especially we were talking about earlier, if it's a public incident where the media keeps playing it over and over and over again, and, you know, the family or the loved ones keep seeing it and hearing it over and over again. What would you say, Mike, from your personal experiences, what would you say and how, you know, about the healing that's needed after the loss of a loved one to gun violence. So, you know, just the thought of dealing with that loss.
Well, as I explained to you, most, I can't even say most, everyone that has to deal with that is devastated. And, you know, that's where, you know, I come in, because, like I said, I want people to understand that, like you said, people's minds are destroyed at that time. You know, you're talking to them and you're trying to, you know, convey your condolences or trying to be of some assistance to them. But they're not really grasping what you're doing, because, like I said, their emotion, their mindset is gone. And I'm telling you this because I went through it. So I understand and I know that during that time is very, very important to be able to have people around you that are minds that can keep you, you know, here. Because, like I said, it's something that's you don't even want to experience. You just to be, like I said, to deal with just on an ordinary situation of losing someone to gun violence, or losing a family member to natural causes is hard enough to deal with. But when it's set in the settings of tragedy, you know, gun violence, being murdered, and that's something totally different. And like I said, it's very key to have people in place, because you need to talk to someone. You need to be able to figure out where do you go from that point. And a lot of people are not, as I said when I first got on, they get stuck. They're not able to come out of it. So the mental part of it is very important and needs to be highlighted. And these are some of the reasons, like I said, why I talk and I speak to family. There's a group of women, you know, that comes together because they loved ones have been murdered, and they feel that the city or the police department or elected officials haven't dealt with it the way that they have dealt with other cases, and they're angry and they're hurting and they're crying, and they're, you know, their mental capacity is unstable because of the situation. And just to hear them talking to you, it breaks you up. So if they're telling you their story and they have you literally in tears, imagine what is going through their minds and what they're dealing with at that time. And that's why, like you said, and I agree with it, that it is very, very important to bring that to light, that yes, that there's a mental stability in regards to dealing with the loss of a loved one to gun violence.
Thank you for that, Mike. So let me ask both of you this. Let's really talk about this. From what we're seeing on the street right now, and the continued losses of gun violence, what is the missing piece that we need to do more of and do better of in helping families? Because not only is the help that we need for the victims and survivors, but we also need to help the perpetrators, the ones who are. And conducting the act of violence, because sometimes, to be honest with you, sometimes they don't know and they don't get it. And that's what scares me, you know, from a mental health perspective. We're out here doing counseling and therapy and support for especially the young generation today. And let me tell you, to be honest, it's scary when you talk with a young person who has no regard for life and can talk about taking a person's life without having any remorse or any fear of doing that. And when you listen to really where it's coming from, sometimes they've had a bad childhood, or they've been abused, or they've lacked love, or they have themselves have been victims of some form of violence, and now they're, you know, they didn't get the help, there was no psychological support, there was no family support, and now they grew up with this anger that they're turning that anger over into taking the life of others. And so what are we going to do, or how can we address this piece of bringing that mental health piece to the conversation for gun violence so that we can, one, provide healing, two, look at the core, the root cause of why these acts of violence are happening? What do you think?
How do we get it to the forefront? I feel by getting an elected official that's not scared to talk about it, to go on record talking about it, talking about what have we done to address this. There has been nothing done. You know, they allocate money for this, they allocate money for that, you know, but have they allocated money to the mental health portion of it? No. Why? Because nobody's talking about it. So I think it starts there, being able to have it introduced and, you know, really sticking fast with it. You know, you can't start it, not saying you, Mr. Scudder, because we know where your heart and where your mindset is in regards to this issue, but being, like I said, holding people accountable for what they are doing or what not doing or what they are not doing. And that's what 2015 is about. That right now is, you know, really saying, okay, look, enough is enough. Too many people have died. Too many people are going through this. Too many people are going through it. And that's why you see the reaction of what's going on throughout the communities, throughout the state, throughout the country, throughout the world. People are just fed up with government, with people sitting back doing nothing, but it also falls on us as well, because we can't say we want to stop and we're not doing anything about it.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. I'll come back to you on that in a minute. Sugar, you got anything to add to that, Sugar Ray?
No, not really. Not really. Good point.
Okay, so is it only on the elected officials?
No.
No, and that's why I said that. Excuse me, Sugar Ray, pardon me, brother, how you doing? But that's why I said it's not only on them. We can't blame them if we're not doing nothing. And that's why the last thing that I said was that we have to be involved. We also have to blame ourselves, because it's us as well. And this is going out to men. You know, we were talking, I did a forum last week with Michael Bivens, hosted it. I was a part of it, but he hosted the event. It was done by the radio station, Power 103.9, the new radio station. And one of the things that he said is that he's seen a lot of women, you know, going to these different town hall meetings and at the different rallies and stuff. You know, the brothers have to be out there, not saying that we're not out there. There's a lot of brothers out there that's doing it, but they need to bring other brothers to it and not depend on our sister to do everything. We have to do it. We hold a stronger voice. We have the sister speaking up when it should be us speaking up.
Definitely. I think too often, we people, parents, siblings of who lost loved ones to violence, any form, too often we look outside, right? We look to the outside psychologist, we look to the outside help, the outside therapist, the outside elected official to fix our condition, not realizing that, just going off topic real quick, that in some cases they are part of the problem. Right, and so we always have to keep it on self and always check our own self and be accountable and say, how do we collectively, those of us in this particular community, how do we address this issue? Because I don't want people to get confused, when we talk about mental health and we talk about gun violence, is because some people who can kill, have killed, or will kill are not, or should not, what I would consider, be considered unstable. They will do it, and they can do it at peace, right, and go on to live life without any nightmares or any demons and things like that. And most recently, we, the public, the general public, the world, witnessed Darren Wilson say with a straight face, you know, what happened and that he would do it again. There are people in war, right, whether it's what people would consider, you know, the mainstream war or just wars in the streets or war with itself, who commit what some would call heinous acts that they would consider is regular, and they did it for their survival and feel no ills about it. So I just wanted to say that to be clear when speaking about gun violence and mental health particularly, that we understand that just because someone shoots someone with a gun doesn't mean that that person is crazy. Again, should we just look to outside officials? Absolutely not. It is our job as human beings, as brothers and sisters, right, who want a better world and who want to see ourselves and our community operate at an optimal level, health-wise, mental health, you know, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically. It's our job to address these issues and to figure out and to go within our own brains to solve the problem. And also understanding that a huge contributing factor to the mental instability, right, in our community that a lot of times leads to the gun violence is the food that creates the chemical imbalances, right, that genetically modified foods that genetically engineer and alter our DNA, right, to make us more animalistic. So that, of course, is intertwined with the emotional instability or, you know, lack of emotional wellness that leads to gun violence in this case we're talking about. So we have to be clear of that and understand that it's through dialogue, right? It's through dialogue. It's through compassion, like you always say, compassion and empathy and sympathy and patience that we help people heal while giving them the tools to express themselves unapologetically. And that a lot of times what I've witnessed is when there are some parents who are angry who just want to scream and flip, people tell them, calm down, be strong. If they're feeling that erratic emotion, let them express that because that may be what gets them through. You know, obviously be there to help them that they don't destroy themselves or anyone else in the process, but let them sometimes flip, go by the water and throw things and break things and scream and curse without worrying about being politically correct. You know, these issues are critical. And on the topic of healing, I don't think we've allowed our people to express themselves in the manner that they need to, in the manner that maybe they should. People are angry, people are hurt. Of course, we're not going to let them, you know, kill each other and things like that, but sometimes we have to open up platforms where people can just scream, man, and just vent unapologetically, you know, and say that they're angry and that they hate something, but to coach them through it, but to let them express that initial emotion. Again, that's a key part of healing, is to be truthful in our expression.
I thank you for you, Sugar, you just touched on two things that I know we need to expound on, and because this is very important. You talk about the fact that people take life or take people's lives not because they're crazy, and that is so true. Because, again, one of the biggest challenges that we face right now is the fact that people don't understand what mental health is. Mental health, and this is as basic a definition that it can be, and this is one of the reasons why we do what we do, where we go into communities to educate people on these topics. Because, again, people don't know what mental health is. They don't understand it because they think that mental health is about being crazy, it's about having some kind of disease or condition. Mental health is our everyday ability to function and cope with life. It's our social, psychological, emotional, and spiritual functionality in dealing with and coping with life. So whether you're happy, you're sad, you're down, you're up, the good days, your bad days, all these are the things that constitute our mental health. In that simple definition, in that simple explanation, we can, just by that alone, if we can take that explanation and disseminate it in such a way that people understand that our mental health state is just about how we take care of ourselves so we can function effectively in everything that we do within life. If we could do that, we would eliminate a lot of the challenges. Why, as you said, people are afraid to speak out. People are afraid to let their emotions out. People have no outlet because one of the things that we've done, we've created the monsters that we're dealing with in a lot of times. Because when people needed an outlet or people need an opportunity to just vent and talk about what they're going through, we shut that down. We've shut down a lot of the ways in which people have a way of just letting out what they're going through without feeling like, oh my God, if I decide to talk about how I'm feeling or how I'm hurting, then people are going to look at me a certain way. I may lose my job. I may be arrested. I may be charged. But the truth of the matter is we've allowed people to really lock themselves within themselves to fight the demons within themselves by themselves because they don't have the outlets to do that. See, the other thing is when you look at the fact that hurt people and how we have over generations brought trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma from all the things that have happened to the point where people don't even know which direction to go in anymore when it comes to addressing how they feel. And most of the time, emotions are acted out on in anger and violence because that's how, and that's the only way most people know how to deal with that. You look at males. Males are not, and we live in a society where males are not allowed to express and show how emotional they are. Because people say, oh, you're weak, you're a wuss. They call all kinds of names and stuff. But then when a male or anyone goes out there and does the act of violence, then they turn around and they also say, now you're animal and you're a beast.
Oh, for real.
So you see how we've created, you know, this whole thing where we've put a stranglehold on people for simply just expressing how they're hurting and where they're hurting, why they're hurting. Sometimes we don't even know why we're hurting because sometimes the hurt has been passed on to us through others and we're taking on that hurt without even knowing why we're hurting. You know, I've worked with a lot of young people who have committed acts of violence, and when I'm sitting with them in a counseling session, I'm like, why did you do it? They're like, I don't know, Mr. Brett. I really don't know. I just felt angry and I just felt angry because they told me to be angry. They told me that, and I'm like, so why did you do it? They're like, I just how I felt, and that's what I. So when we look at a lot of the violence and how the violence is being perpetrated in a lot of our communities, we really have to look back on the fact that we as a people, and this is I'm talking about people across the board, we as a people have been hurting. And have been harboring a lot of anger and aggression within us with no proper outlet. And because we think that mental health is about being crazy and all this craziness, we don't even seek basic therapy or healing or just as Brother Sugar Ray said, just going out to a place where we can just connect with nature. Many of us don't even have the time to do that because we live system and a society that's moving so fast that we don't even take time to grieve and grieve the losses that we've had. Mike can tell you, okay, I've worked with Mike for years, and the one thing that I've always stayed on Mike with is about him dealing with that emotional piece because he was hurting, and he was hurting for a very good reason, but didn't know how to handle that. And I've been with Mike to the point where it was scary for me to see him in that situation because as a brother, I love him and I care for him as a brother and I didn't want to see him hurt himself more. But then it really opened my eyes up even broader to say that as men and as males, we need to move away from this idea that we're so strong that we don't cry or we don't express the emotions that we're going through.
Definitely. Mike, you going to speak real quick?
Sorry, say that again.
Oh, no, I was going to say you had something to say. I wanted to chime in.
I was going to say something. I was going to say that, you know, I always, one of the things, I'm not afraid to cry. I get emotional. I don't care who knows that. If a situation arises, I get emotional. I cry even when I speak to people. You know, I'm talking to the lady that I deal with from the Barclays. She sent me the email, and I'm reading it, and she just happened to call me as I'm reading, and I'm crying. You know, that was something that was big, you know, in regards to Black History Month and being on it by, you know, these people, that a lot to me. But I, in regards to being able to say it, look, I'm a man. I cry. I get emotional. I'm not ashamed to say that, because sometimes you have to let that out. You know, a lot of people, like you said, they want to be big and bad and tell, oh, I ain't going to cry. You cry. Men do cry. They might not cry a lot, but, you know, there are men that, cry. I'm not afraid to say that. And a lot of people are. They can't deal with their emotions.
Definitely. And I think that's right in line with what I was going to touch on. Violence in itself is a learned behavior, right? It's a learned behavior. We got to stick to that. It's again, that's what I was saying, not always the emotional thing, but as we are taught from the first time the baby is smacked on the butt when the baby comes out the womb, man, in order to get someone to do what you want them to do or what you need them to do, you have to use violence, right? We are taught that. That is communicated non-verbally. That is why nonverbal communication is said to be the most important form of communication through body language and through signs and symbols, because that's what we learn. And so in that, we also learn, right, through watching, through observance as children, that men don't cry. If something happens, daddy goes to the bar with his friends, he gets a beer, he goes out, he plays pool, or he screams, he curses, he fights. That's what we learn. We learn that from TV, right? We learn that whenever something happens that affects us as men emotionally, that makes us uncomfortable, we resort to violence, right, or other substances that are self-destructive. And so not only is the violence a learned behavior, but also the way we respond to violence and the way we respond to grief or to loss is also a learned behavior by internalizing. So, yeah, that was a great point, you know, Brother Brett and Mike.
But there's the other side to that, too, okay? There's the other side to that, too. I hear you and I agree with you. It's a learned behavior. But in a survival mode, when our backs are against the wall, when things come at us in certain ways, it's what we keep in our hearts and our minds that manifests itself into the act of what we do and what we say. And what I mean by that is a lot of us continue to keep anger and violence on our minds and in our hearts, so that whenever something happens, the first thing that comes out of us in terms of words or behavior is acts of violence and words of violence and anger. And this is where we talk about that inner peace. You know, we talk about healing and that inner peace and that whole, you know, peace about love and what that is. Because many of us don't know what love is, and many of us never had love. And so we yearn for it and we desire it. And sometimes when we can't get it, we become angry and frustrated. And when you look at that and you look at the way in which you have people taking the lives of another person simply because they didn't get the type of love that they want, or they want the person but the person rejected them and they're willing to take that person's life, you know, you really wonder and you really have to think about what is it that we have in our hearts and on our minds. Mike says, and he said it very well. He said he's not afraid to cry, and I've seen that. He is an emotional person, just like other males that I've worked with, where they're emotional. But at the same time, sometimes I've seen males who are emotional, and that emotional part gets to be very violent and aggressive, that people around you get very nervous and uncomfortable, because now that you're emotional, it means that some of us do get out of control at the same time.
Definitely.
So, you know, so it's important for us, and that's why I chose to focus on this topic the way that I'm focusing on it, because I want to see more healing and wellness for survivors and victims of gun violence. Not only for the survivors and victims, but we also have to help the perpetrators too, because some of them do these acts not knowing why they did it or not understanding why they did it. So we really have to extend, you know, that whole piece where love, empathy, and support for people in general in dealing with these issues is important. That's one of the reasons why I support what Mike's doing, because he's bringing awareness to the gun violence issues and supporting the families in need. And my help for him is to bring that mental health and that emotional wellness piece for them. Because at the end of the day, it only means that there are going to be more people who are angry and frustrated or hurt because of their loss, but still not getting the help or being healed from that loss. So it's very important that we continue pressing this piece because, again, hurt people hurt people. So, Mike.
Yep.
What are you working on right now? What's coming up that people can be aware of from the organization? Anything that you're doing, anything that you're working on that
the first thing that we're doing, I'm doing a meet and greet. I have like 275 businesses that are coming together so I can introduce this program that I have where we're going to take 100 young men and women between the ages of 18 to 24 young adults that have been formerly incarcerated and put them into a program and help them get a job, education. If they don't have their GED, we're going to steer them toward getting a GED. We have mentors that's coming out to the program. That's going to come in different celebrities, elected officials, that every month someone is going to come in and speak to them to, you know, give up to find out their progress report and just ensure them that somebody's going to work with them to make sure that they accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. This is not funded by the government. This is privately funded. We have a number of different businesses and everything that are coming together. So that's going to be on February 27th. If y'all want information on it, y'all can email me at laytheguns@yahoo.com. Once again, laytheguns@yahoo.com. And I'll send you the information. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael Tucker Sr. And, you know, we'll keep you updated. One of the major things that we're working on, and I'm happy, is the Stop the Violence concert. And this is a free concert that we are doing in Brooklyn. And this is for people who lost loved ones to gun violence. I'm partnering up with Hot 97 to do this. So that we have the victims tribute video that's going to be on Hot 97's website. If you lost a loved one to gun violence and you would like to have them included in the video, just send three photos, the name of the person that's deceased, their age, and your contact information to laytheguns@yahoo.com, and we'll include them in the video.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. So that's from Lady Guns Down. Brother Sugar, your organization, because you run an organization as well, can you share about the organization and anything that you have that people can get involved with and know more about what you're doing?
Oh, man. Well, thank you for the, you know, for the love, but I don't really run anything, man. I'm just a part, you know, of our Movement for Progress, you know, a particular organization I guess I'm mostly connected to and do most work with the Sacred Divahood Incorporation. And what we're doing now actually is we're in the process of building a private school in Los Angeles, California. We're still location scouting, but it'll probably most likely be either Compton, Crenshaw, Watts, or Inglewood that we'll build our school in, you know, K-12. You know, arts and sciences, and that's because we believe, myself and my partner, Ms. Naisha Williams, we've, again, through our own personal experience, have realized that through the various arts, the performing arts, the fine arts, the visual arts, the graphic arts, all of the different arts, those are healing tools. Those are tools that I use to heal myself through my emotional trauma from being a victim of gun violence, from being a perpetrator of gun violence, being in contemplation of committing suicide. You know, I use art to get myself through her as well, through her situation. So that's what we're in the process of. You know, school was scheduled to launch September 7th, 2015, in the fall semester. And yeah, we're really excited about that. You know, we have our first fundraiser coming up actually in New York City and Brooklyn, February 27th. It's going to be a blended display of the arts of, you know, fine arts, visual arts, also some performing arts. We're going to, you know, have some great performances. And yeah, so if anyone wants any more information about the school, they can send an email to Sacred Arts Academy at Sacred Divas. That's S-A-C-R-I-T, Sacred Arts, A-R-T-S, Academy, A-C-A-D-E-N-Y, at sacreddivas.org. That's S-A-C-R-I-T-D-E-V-A-S.org. And, you know, we're just, again, just part of the movement, man, just part of our movement for progress towards building a better world. And obviously, emotional wellness is at the core of everything that we do. And love, love for self, love for others, love for nature, love for life. So, again, that's our work. Peace.
All right. Thank you so much, gentlemen. This has been enlightening. This has been a great dialogue. As I said, ladies and gentlemen, we are on our January Suicide Awareness and Prevention Tour. Our theme this month is healing and wellness. And we also, because you said suicide, people be like, people really don't understand that there are different forms of suicide, types of suicide, ways in which people take their lives or take the lives of others with them. So gun violence being one of them, we wanted to also focus on the gun violence piece and also to add that mental health piece for us to really understand that this is much bigger than the act itself. So I want to thank again Mr. Sean Marston, Mr. Sugar Ray, a.k.a. Sugar Ray, and Mr. Michael Tucker. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for being with us, and we look forward to having you with us again as we continue focusing on the healing and mental health services and support and needs for victims of gun violence and violence in general. But we will have a bigger, broader conversation on that violence piece, my brother Sugar, as we look at, you know, just what you said, you know, the broad sense of a lot of other things that are also contributing to the violence across the board, okay?
Yes, sir.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for joining. We continue with our tour going into January 31st. Every day we have different topics on the radio focusing on mental health, mental illness, emotional wellness, suicide and depression. And we look forward to continue raising awareness through this platform. For those who are listening to the archive, please share it on your social media. Promote it, help to get the word out because you never know who may be listening and impacted by what they hear. So continue tuning in, continue supporting our efforts. We thank you all. Have a great day. Enjoy your day with positive energy, positive enlightenment. No matter how bad your day is, no matter how bad your life may seem, just remember that there is hope as long as you're alive. It's how we think. It's our perspective. Sometimes it's not what we have, but it's how we think about what we have and think about what we don't have that will allow ourselves to get past and get through the struggles and challenges of life. So no matter how bad you think your life may be, if you just take a minute to change your perspective and change the way you look at life, you may realize that your life may be better off than you think. Sometimes you just have to take the steps towards making it better. Have a great day. God bless. One love.
Peace. One love.